We often hear that the Buddha didn't talk about metaphysical issues, about whether the cosmos was finite or infinite, eternal or not eternal, whether you had a soul inside your body that was different from your body, or whether your body was your soul. When an enlightened person passed away, whether that person could be described as existing or not existing, or both or neither. In fact, whether or not you had a self. Or what your self might be if you did have one. Those were issues that the Buddha put aside. But there was one metaphysical issue that he talked about in a lot of detail, and that was the issue of karma, the power of your actions. That's because it's very relevant to what he taught and what we're doing right now. The fact that we're doing something, that's karma. So the question is, well, what can you do? What's the range of your action? Do you have freedom of choice? And do your actions have any consequences? And what determines those consequences? Well, those are metaphysical issues. But they're very relevant. If you're going to try to put it into suffering, you have to have some clear answers on this. And the way the Buddha approached action was very distinctive. People were talking about karma in his time. There's a common misbelief that everybody in his time believed in action the way he did, and that there was rebirth that was based on action. That's not the case. There are a lot of people who said that karma has no consequences at all. You don't really have any free choice. Everything's very random, or everything's totally determined. And some people believed in rebirth and said, well, it's not determined by your actions. It's already written to fate. Other people said there's no rebirth at all. You die and that's it. So these were issues the Buddha had to address, especially if he's going to teach a path to the end of suffering, because a path is composed of actions. And you have to understand your actions if you're going to do them skillfully. In fact, a lot of his teachings on action come from the kind of lessons you learn by developing a skill. Think of any skill you've had: dancing, cooking, carpentry, plumbing, electricity, music, learning a language, learning how to teach. All of things require that you observe your actions and learn from them. That means there's a pattern. And if you couldn't learn from your actions, there'd be nothing to learn, nothing to do, no way to develop a skill. And the fact that you can learn from your actions means there's a pattern behind them, that when you meet up with certain circumstances, then you can learn how to deal skillfully with those, and the next time you meet up with those circumstances, you try the same approach. You get results. But then sometimes you notice, well, I tried the same approach, and it seemed to be the same sort of circumstances, but it didn't get the same results, and you have to go back and look more carefully. But this also assumes that you have the power of choice, that you can choose to act one way or another. So you have freedom of choice. There is a certain amount of patternedness to the principle of action, but it's not totally mechanical. In other words, it's not deterministic. You can change the way you think, you can change the way you act, you can change the way you speak. And this has an important power in either giving rise to stress and suffering or putting an end to it. That's what we're doing right now, is we're meditating. We're trying to master a skill. Each time you stay with the breath, you want to be able to remember, okay, what lessons have you learned from dealing with the breath in the past? Are they relevant now, or are things different? You try the approaches you've learned from the past, and when they work, you stick with them, and when they don't work, you've got to learn how to adjust. You have to learn how to observe again. This means there's some wiggle room in the principle of action. As the Buddha once said, if you had to meet up with the results of every action you did in the past, in other words, if you killed something, then you're going to have to get killed. If you stole something, you're going to have to get stolen from. Down to all the details. He said it would be impossible for anyone to practice to attain awakening. We'd all have to go through who knows how many lifetimes. And of course, in the course of those many lifetimes, you probably do more actions, which would then lead to more need to come back. There would be an endless process. What he did point out, though, is that each action leads to a certain kind of result. And the way you experience that is going to be complicated by many things, other actions you've done, and also your state of mind in the present moment. This is where meditation becomes very important. You don't have much control over what you did in the past. In fact, right now you have no control. But you can control your state of mind. Now, there are two things in particular that are important. One is developing unlimited goodwill, compassion, empathetic joy, and equanimity. In other words, working on the Brahma-viharas. That helps to create an unlimited state of mind. The analogy the Buddha gives is of a big lump of salt. If you took that lump of salt and put it into a cup of water, you couldn't drink the water because there was so little water in the cup. But if you threw it into a river, and assuming that the rest of the river is clean, the fact that there's so much water in the river means that you can still drink the water. It's not too salty. In fact, you probably wouldn't even taste the salt at all. That's the same with bad actions from the past. If your mind is expansive, then the results of those actions are going to be mitigated by the good karma you're creating in the present moment, the good state of mind you're creating, and that is a kind of karma. This is an important principle to keep in mind, that when you attain a state of concentration, you're not running into some cosmic principle or ground of being or something. You want to view it as a kind of action. Learn how to do it skillfully and then observe it. This is when the Four Noble Truths come in. You observe the action and ask, okay, where is the stress here? At that point, it might be very subtle, but after all, you begin to notice there is a level of stress, and you notice it because it comes up and down. And what did you do? What did you do when it went up, and what did you do when it went down? You begin to notice the connection between your actions and the level of stress you experience, and their actions right in the present moment. And this way you develop more skill in the meditation. In fact, it's this series of questions. You see the cause of the action that's raising the level of stress, and you let it go. You develop the factors that allow you to do this, the concentration that allows you to stick with this, even to stick with pain. This is another one of the things that makes a huge difference in how you experience the results of past actions, is how you deal with pleasure and pain. If your mind gets overcome by these things, you're going to fall prey to lots of bad stuff from the past. But if you learn how to use the pleasure and use the pain, in other words, use the pain as a guide to figure out what the mind is doing right now. You're not wallowing in the pain. You're trying to figure it out. You become more aggressive toward the pain in trying to understand it, so you're not just victimized by it. And the same with the pleasure. You try to use the pleasure. What kind of pleasure is good for the mind? You learn how to analyze that. What kind of pleasure is bad for the mind? Okay, learn how to develop the pleasure that's good, i.e. the pleasure that comes from concentration, the pleasure that comes from generosity and virtue. You develop these forms of pleasure so they can put the mind in a place where it can observe things clearly. So you develop the Brahma-viharas, and you learn how not to be overwhelmed by pleasure and pain, but use them as tools. And this way you mitigate the bad effects of past actions, in fact, and you learn to see into the nature of action more and more clearly, so you can actually come to the end of action. As you take apart all the various levels of fabrication and intentions in the mind in the present moment, you finally get to something that's unfabricated. That, the Buddha said, is the end of action. So it's important that we learn how to understand the principle of karma and see how it plays out in our meditation. So we don't have to come back and get killed again and get stolen from again and keep killing and stealing and never get out of this cycle. You understand that you have freedom of choice right now, and the principle of karma is, in terms of the Buddha's similes for this, is like the flowing of water. There are eddies, there are whirlpools, but you can divert the water. You divert it in the direction you want it to go. Sometimes it's coming along really strong and it's hard to divert it, but when you learn the proper skills, you can manage it. It's like those walls they have on the Mississippi River. They've been able to wall in a whole river, keep it from spilling out in areas they don't want it to go. Or you can learn how to wall in your karma and divert it over to the direction of release, liberation. So you're not stuck in the gears of a machine. You're actually along a river here. And you want to divert your boat, so eventually you can get across the river, because you know those walls they have across the Mississippi, they're not going to last forever. And your ability to deal with the river of your karma, it's not going to last forever, but you can get across. You can use the current. The same way, if you have a sailboat, you can use the wind to get across. You can use the current to get across the river. Learn how to divert it in the proper direction. And it's when you understand the currents, that's how you can cross. That's what it's all about.